We're beginning the 17th chapter of 1 Samuel. In the previous chapter, we find that David had come into the court of Saul, and as his physician and one who was able to soothe his evil spirit with music, had become a well-known and also a very valuable service to Saul. And just as divine providence had given him that position, not only for the purpose of soothing Saul and helping the nation, but also for the purpose of him being able to learn more about the government and actually prepare himself for becoming king, which the Lord had anointed him to be, we find in this chapter that he is going to become the champion of the people by fairly defeating the giant Goliath of Gath. So, verse 1 of chapter 17, "Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle, and were gathered together at Shochoh, which belongeth to Judah, and pitched between Shochoh and Azekah in Ephes-Damim." Now these areas where they had come together for the battle are south of Jerusalem and west of Bethlehem. And so we see that the Philistine army now has moved into the territory of Judah. They have arrayed themselves in such a manner that they are ready for battle. They are threatening. They are challenging. And so we see a great threat now to the people of God, to the nation of Israel. At one time, Saul and his army had practically defeated the Philistines. But because of poor judgment on the part of Saul, when he required that no man be allowed to eat anything, and they could not properly pursue these Philistines to the end, then they were allowed to escape back into their own territory. At this time, Saul is not possessed by the bad spirit. Perhaps this great threat to the nation has gotten enough of his mental energy going in that direction that he doesn't have time to be mentally depressed or to have some kind of a mental disease. Maybe he is able to think singularly now and not be distressed by other thoughts. So we find that David is not with him at the present. David has gone back home to Bethlehem, there to be with his parents and to be with the flocks out in the field. So even though David has risen to such prominence in the court, he is also willing to be very humbled, and he remembers his home. "And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah to set the battle in array against the Philistines." So here we have now the two armies that are gathered together, set in array against each other. And verse 3 says, "And the Philistines stood on a mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them." So here we see that each army is standing on a mountain or on a hill and looking across the valley to the opposing army. And the distance is probably so close that they're able to not only see, but maybe shout back and forth to each other as they prepare for this conflict that the battle is going to bring about. Verse 4, "And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span." So now we have the introduction of Goliath. He's called a champion. This word for champion comes from the word campus, which means the field. Also from it comes from the word campo, which means camp. And so what this means is that this man was considered to be a camp fighter. And because of his ability to win the fights in the camps, he's called a champion. Now his height was 6 cubits and a span, and there are various interpretations as to just exactly how tall Goliath would be. The most common interpretation of a cubit is 18 inches, which is the measurement from the elbow to the tip of the third finger. And the most common interpretation of a span is 9 inches, which is the measurement of the hand spread out from the tip of the fifth finger to the tip of the thumb. So using that measurement, Goliath would be 9 feet and 9 inches. Now this is a very tall person to be 9 feet and 9 inches. However, other translations and other measurements have him ranging in height from 6 feet 9 inches to 11 feet 8 inches. So we know that he was a very tall person, and if we take the standard measurement of the cubit and the span, he's 9 feet 9 inches. Now, if he was as well proportioned in other measurements as he was in height, and also if he had the proportionate amount of strength to go with his size, he would have been a very formidable foe for another individual to come up against. And we see no wonder then at why he is a champion, why he's referred to as a champion, and also as to why the Philistines would be willing to put him up against anyone that the Israelites might send out. Verse 5, "And he had a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass." So we see here that he's very well outfitted in armor. He's going to have armor all over. And the weight of this coat of mail, which is a coat that has interlaid pieces of metal over each other, kind of like the scales on a fish, was 5,000 shekels of brass, and this would amount to 156 pounds and 4 ounces. Now, some say that the 5,000 shekels are not necessarily the weight of the coat, but it was the value of it if you had to buy it. But either way, it's an expensive coat, and it's also a very heavy one if this is the true weight of it. And of course, a man of this size would be able to carry a coat that heavy, but it would be quite a burden for the average man to carry a coat that heavy. "And he had greaves of brass upon his legs," which means that his legs, which would be very muchly exposed, since the average man would be real close to his legs in height, and so his legs had to be extra protected, and he had brass armor on the legs. "And a target of brass between his shoulders," that is, his shoulders were protected especially, and there's some dispute as to exactly what this means by a target of brass between his shoulders. "And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam." Now, as I understand it, a weaver's beam was a very heavy object, and it would be quite a burden for one man just to pick up a weaver's beam and throw it. But his spear was that heavy, that large, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron. Now, 600 shekels of iron is 18 pounds and 12 ounces. So he had quite a weight on this spear for the spear's head. And so if he was able to heave this instrument and make it strike its mark, it certainly would do a lot of damage being that heavy. It's quite a bit heavier than what we would consider a sledgehammer today. "And one bearing a shield went before him." So he had a person to carry the shield for him. He didn't need much of a shield with all this armor and all the strength that he had, but there was one there carrying a shield. And some have described this shield as being not only a shield, but it was built with a point in the center of it so that it could be used not only as a defensive weapon, but also as an offensive weapon. Verse 8, "And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel, and said unto them, Why are you come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and ye servants to Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me." So, Goliath gives quite a challenge here. He stands out and he calls out to the army of the Israelites, and he even taunts them. And he asks them, "Why are you come out to set your battle in array?" Now, this could be taken in several ways. Why do you want to have a battle when it's really not necessary to have a battle to settle this thing? We can just settle it with the lives of two men being at stake. Send a man out against me rather than two armies fight and have many people to die. You send one man out against me and let's fight. And he further says, "Am not I Philistine and ye servants to Saul?" Now look at the difference in us. I'm a Philistine. I'm a free man. I'm a person that is guided by the higher things in life. We have extra skills. We have a nation here that is powerful, and yet you are simply servants to Saul. I can do greater feats than your king can do, and yet I am a mere Philistine, and he's been made your king, and you are his servants. And this could also be interpreted to mean that you're just a bunch of slaves. We have a slave army we're fighting against, and we are a true nation, whereas you are simply servants to this man called Saul. So he says, "Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. And if he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us." So this is the threat that's made, and this is the challenge that's thrown out. And we know that the Philistines didn't intend to follow this. They didn't intend to abide by this at all, because when Goliath was slain, they didn't give themselves over to be servants to the Israelites. But this is something that they put out just in case they could be victorious with this one battle between one man and another. Then the Israelites would be bound to be their servants. And we also see that this is probably a threat that's made directly at Saul himself. If Saul be so great, if he be your king, you send him out and let him fight with me. Let's see who is the greatest. Let's see who really should be the king, who should be the ruler. Let's see who should be the servant and who should be the master. Verse 10, "And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day." This word defy really means I strip bare. I'm challenging you. I'm placing a duty or a task before you at this time to see what you're really made of. "I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man. Out of all your armies, out of all your numbers, can you just come up with one man? Give me a man that we may fight together." Now you can see how that this would be a very terrifying threat and challenge, especially to the man Saul. Saul, who had lost the Spirit of the Lord. Saul, who no longer was following in the steps that the Lord would have him to follow. He was now disobedient to God. He was not God's choice for king. He didn't have the mind and the will to come up against this man. So it would be a very terrifying thing to him. And of course, when the leader is terrified, when the leader doesn't have the mental desire to do something, of course his army, his followers, are not going to have it either. So verse 11 says, "When Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid." So Saul and his army both were afraid and dismayed at the great challenge that is put out here by this giant Goliath. Now that we've seen the man Goliath and the great challenge that he's issued out to the armies of Israel, and the great fear that Israel is as a result of this situation, the scene changes now back to David. And we're going to see some of the affairs of David and how he's going to enter into this picture of the battle with the Philistines. Verse 12. "Now David was the son of the Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse." Of course, we already know this from previous study. "And he had 8 sons, and the man went among men for an old man in the days of Saul." That is, Jesse, the father of David, was an old man. And he was old enough that as he went among men, he was outstanding for his age. And so he would be too old to serve in the army. He'd already done his part for Israel, and now was reaping the benefits of the glory that comes with age. Verse 13, "And the 3 eldest sons of Jesse went and followed Saul to battle." So the 3 oldest sons of Jesse, that is the older brothers of David, were now in the army, and they were following after Saul in this campaign against the Philistines. And the names of his 3 sons that went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, and next to him, Abinadab, and the 3rd, Shammah. And David was the youngest, and the 3 eldest followed Saul. So the picture is that David is now back home. He's helping his father tend the flocks, whereas the 3 older brothers are off to the war. They're in the army following Saul. "But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem." Now David had been with Saul. He had been the one receiving the glory up to this point. But now he has gone from Saul during this time of the battle, and he's back home feeding his father's sheep at Bethlehem. So we might note that here's one who's been anointed to be king eventually. Here's one who's been in the court of the king. He's been the personal physician and armor bearer of Saul. But yet now he is content to be home feeding the sheep and carrying out the humble duties of a shepherd. Verse 16, And the Philistine drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. So here the army was camped out for 40 days, and each day, morning and evening, this giant, Goliath, would come near and make his challenge, make his threat, and as he did this, he no doubt gained more and more prestige and more self-confidence. He was now feeling that nobody would beat his challenge. And as he gained more self-confidence, then we see that Israel probably became more timorous, more afraid, more terrified, and less willing to come up against this man. So this was a standoff now for 40 days. They'd been camped out here in this one spot for quite a while. And although there might have been some minor skirmishes between various parties of these two great armies, there was no true battle. It all hinged upon somebody meeting the challenge of this giant Goliath. Verse 17, And Jesse said unto David his son, Take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp to thy brethren. So he sends David on a very lowly mission. You go and take this corn and this bread to your brethren. He didn't have anything to ride on in the way of an animal like an ass, but he was to run and carry this on his back. And then he further says in that verse 18, And carry these 10 cheeses to the captain of their 1,000, and look how thy brethren fare, and take their pledge. So he sent some cheese along, not for the brethren, but for the captain. This was for the commander of their group. And so Jesse was not only seeing after his sons, but he was also seeing after the welfare of the captain. And he tells David to look how thy brethren fare. See how they're getting along. See what kind of state of health they're in. What kind of company they're keeping. What kind of spirit they have. And so here he was concerned about the well-being of his sons. And he sent them to inquire as to how they were doing. And then he further tells David, and take their pledge. That is, if they have pawned anything, David is authorized to redeem it so that they can have their possessions returned to them. So Jesse is an example of a pious parent, one that is interested in the well-being of his sons, and one who goes about to see that they have the best that he can provide for them. Even though they're away from home, they're in the army, and they're in a state of war. Verse 19 just gives a general overview of the situation. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. So that's the situation. That's the national point of prominence right now, the warfare between Saul and his army, the Israelites, and the Philistines. And three of David's brothers, his older brothers, sons of Jesse, were involved in that by being in the army. Now, verse 20, And David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with the keeper and took and went as Jesse had commanded him. So we see that David, even though he's on an important mission now, he doesn't forget about the little things. He leaves the sheep with the keeper. He is faithful over a few things, and consequently then he's going to be qualified to be ruler over many things. So he went as Jesse had commanded him. So this mission was not something that he had instigated. It was not his idea, but it was simply done in obedience to his parent, to his father, Jesse. And he came to the trench as the host was going forth to the fight and shouted for the battle. So he was getting there just as the army was going forth to meet with this army of the Philistines. How much actual active fighting there was here is not very clear, because it seemed that the armies had not really engaged themselves at this point, as long as Goliath was coming forth and making his great challenge. But they were coming forth to the trench. They were coming forth to put up an array in case the Philistines attacked, then they would be there to withstand them. Verse 21, For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. Here they were ready to fight, ready to go into intense warfare, intense battle, although that had not actually occurred at this time. There was still this matter with Goliath that had not yet been settled. And David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage, and ran into the army, and came and saluted his brethren. So he took the carriage as far as he could, then he left it with the keeper of the carriage. Then he ran into the army himself and came and saluted his brethren, carrying his goods, the loaves and the corn and the cheeses, the gifts that he brought to the brothers and to the captain. Verse 23, and as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. So here we see the great challenge now that's given forth again by Goliath. He comes forth while David is there talking with his brothers, and David heard what he said. David heard the great challenge. He heard the putting down of God's army. How that this one Philistine claimed to be able to conquer any man that Israel had to put up. And how that the outcome of this whole battle should be determined by whether or not he could be victorious over any one of Israel's men. So David heard this. Verse 24, and all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. So here again, David not only hears what Goliath has to say, here's the great challenge, but he sees the response that the men of Israel have to it. They're afraid. They run from him as soon as they see the man, so that they're in no condition at all to take up Goliath's challenge. Nobody wants to encounter him. They are very muchly afraid at his very presence. And so these men of Israel say in verse 25, and the men of Israel said, have ye seen this man that is come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up. And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. So we see then there's a great promise made to anyone who can defy, anyone who can overcome this Goliath. And David hears this. And we're going to see how that this situation with Israel and Goliath is of tremendous interest to David, and what kind of a part he's going to play in it. Our time has expired at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.